canceling hundreds of domestic flights today under orders from the FAA. Regulators say with the government still shut down, it's needed to keep travelers safe. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. The Trump administration is appealing a judge's order to pay full food nutrition benefits. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Leila Faldin. The judge said withholding money was a political move, and the administration didn't consider the harm it's causing. Also, the Anti-Defamation League set up what it calls a Mamdani monitor after New York City elected its first Muslim mayor. The head of the ADL says it isn't, quote, inherently pejorative. It's Friday, November 7th, which is a big deal around here because it's A. Martinez's birthday. So you're 30 again, A?
30 is the new 50.
The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The Trump administration has appealed a federal judge's order requiring the full payment of food assistance benefits. These are known as SNAP. The federal judge in Rhode Island ruled that the government failed to consider the harm to millions of Americans who rely on these benefits. NPR's Tovia Smith reports.
U.S. District Judge John McConnell Jr. accused the Trump administration of delaying food aid for, quote, political reasons. He said the president's own social media posts prove his intent to defy a previous order to keep SNAP assistance flowing. The Trump administration has said benefits would be partially restored, but it could take weeks or months. Now the judge says additional funding must be tapped to ensure full benefits are restored immediately. Anti-hunger groups call the decision a major victory, but worry the administration's appeal will mean more delays for needy Americans. The Trump administration issued a short statement blaming Democrats for the lapse in benefits. Tovia Smith, NPR News.
The federal government shutdown is slowing air traffic. The government is moving to gradually reduce airline traffic by up to 10%. This will affect dozens of airports across the country, including major hubs in Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, and Newark. The tracking site, FlightAware.com, says more than 800 flights have already been canceled today. Travel expert Brian Kelly says this is going to have a ripple effect on airline traffic.
It's not just canceled flights. Because of these canceled flights, there's going to be thousands more delays as well.
There are staffing shortages at airports around the country. Air traffic controllers are required to work through a shutdown, but they don't get paid. Many are looking at other work. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says the U.S. military attacked another boat in the Caribbean, killing three people. Writing online last night, he alleged the boat was part of drug trafficking, but he provided no evidence. This comes after the Republican-led Senate blocked a bipartisan bill yesterday. It sought to limit President Trump's ability to attack Venezuela. Shareholders at Tesla's annual meeting in Texas have approved a massive pay package for CEO Elon Musk. As NPR's Camila Domonoske reports, the package is potentially worth $1 trillion.
Elon Musk's previous pay package is currently tied up in a legal battle after a shareholder challenged it. That pay package was a world record, too. Stock worth more than $55 billion if Musk hit all the targets, which he did. The new one, an order of magnitude larger, is linked to a new set of targets for valuation and earnings and the number of cars and robots sold. Musk has said it's not the money that he values so much as the influence the stock represents. Influence over Tesla, and more specifically, over the humanoid robots and other AI-powered tech that Tesla might build and sell. Camila Domonoske, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The Trump administration is moving to lower some drug prices, including on popular obesity and type 2 diabetes drugs. NPR's Sydney Lupkin says medications such as Ozempic and Wegovy are part of the deal.
It expands coverage to some, but not all, Medicare beneficiaries with obesity. They have to have additional health conditions or a body mass index over 35. People with Medicare will be able to get them for a copay of $50 a month. State Medicaid programs will have to opt in, but the lower cost of the drugs to the government, $245 per patient per month, is something that I'm hearing will likely push them toward this.
NPR's Sydney Lupkin reporting. The World Meteorological Organization says 2025 may be the second or third hottest year on record. NPR's Alejandra Barunda has more.
WMO says the planet is about 1.4 degrees Celsius hotter than it was during the pre-industrial era. And all that planetary heating means it's almost more surprising when a year doesn't come with the tagline, hottest year ever. So it doesn't look like 2025 will end up with that superlative. That's probably due to natural cycles in Earth's weather systems that dragged global temperatures down slightly this year. But overall, the pattern of global warming is clear. That's according to WMO Deputy Secretary General Co Barrett.
Each fraction of a degree matters for communities facing floods, droughts, and heat extremes.
The report comes as the United Nations annual climate summit starts next week. Alejandra Borunda, NPR News.
And I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the principle that helping those in need is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. This is NPR.
Well, I've got two brothers and they're in the Marines.
This is Drew Miller from Boiled in Lead, urging you to support KAXE and KBXE. Community radio is a lifeline for culture, and these days, it's under threat. If you enjoy it, you need to help pay for it, because nobody else is going to do it except for you. Please support KAXE and the Summer Pledge Drive.
Make a donation now by visiting our website, kaxe.org, and clicking the word donate, or text donate to 218-326-1234.
Climbing up that old gallows ladder, cried out so gaily for his highway cap and feather. I've always been a lively lad, never
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadil in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Los Angeles, California. Airlines have begun canceling hundreds of flights. This after the FAA directed airlines to gradually reduce air traffic by 10% at dozens of major airports across the country.
The agency says the move is needed to ensure safety amid a shortage of air traffic controllers during the government shutdown. But many questions remain about this planned reduction in air traffic and what it will mean for airlines and travelers. In a few minutes, we'll speak with Chris Sununu. He's president and CEO of the trade group Airlines for America. First, though,
NPR's transportation correspondent Joel Rose hopefully will answer those questions. Joel, so what do we know about the FAA's plan?
So late Thursday, the FAA officially released the list of 40 major airports where it's going to reduce the number of flights, including some big airline hubs, Atlanta, Chicago, Denver, Dallas, and more. The FAA's plan requires airlines to phase in these cuts gradually, so the airlines will cut about 4% of their flights through this weekend and gradually work their way up to 10% by next Friday. Airlines have some discretion to decide how they're going to hit those targets, and these reductions will not apply to international flights, only to domestic flights. And I should note, it's not just aviation. The plan will also limit space launches, which can be an extra demand for air traffic controllers to handle.
So it sounds like it's going to be some kind of a disruption. How big of a mess is it going to be?
It's really hard to say. I mean, Delta Airlines said that it would operate the vast majority of its flights as scheduled, but that the frequency of those flights to some destinations may be limited. United Airlines says this is not a high-demand time of year to fly, so the airline does have empty seats and is optimistic that it can accommodate many customers. United Senior Vice President David Kinzelman spoke with NPR's All Things Considered yesterday, and here's some of what he said.
We have service disruptions frequently in the airline business. It could be storms, it could be staffing triggers. So we've got a good playbook. Just to put it in perspective, the impact here is about what we would expect from a medium-sized storm.
But this is bigger than just a thunderstorm in one part of the country, with 40 airports all over the country having reduced capacity all at the same time. There's no real precedent for something like this at this scale, so it's hard to say how it's going to go.
It's also hard to be patient when you have somewhere to go. So how are travelers handling it?
Travelers are understandably pretty worried. Our member station WABE spoke to a woman named Ellen Silva who had just arrived in Atlanta yesterday. Silva is supposed to fly back to Baltimore on Tuesday, and she is concerned about what could happen if that flight is canceled.
I would miss work, and I'd have some very unhappy people that I work for because they depend on me so they can travel. And if I'm not there, they can't leave.
Wow. Now, a big question for a lot of those people is why all of this is happening right now.
The official explanation from the FAA, as we heard, is that it is necessary for safety. The government shutdown is clearly taking a toll on air traffic controllers who are required to work without pay. Some have taken on second jobs. Many are calling out sick. Overall, the air traffic control system had been working fairly well during the shutdown until this past weekend, when we did see staffing shortages at dozens of facilities all at the same time. You know, and even last night, there were hour-long delays at several big airports, including Boston and Washington, D.C. But the administration's critics and some air traffic controllers are saying this is mostly a PR move or a political move that is related to talks around ending the government shutdown. It's also possible that more than one of those explanations could be true at the same time. In other words, it could be about safety or politics or both.
NPR's Joel Rose. Joel, thanks.
You're welcome, eh?
Okay, now let's get a sense of how airlines are reacting to the new air traffic restrictions with help from Chris Sununu. He's president and CEO of Airlines for America, and that's a trade group that represents passenger and cargo airlines. Sununu is also a former Republican governor of New Hampshire. Good morning, Governor, and thank you for being on the program.
Good morning.
So FAA Administrator Brian Bedford said he's not aware of the agency taking measures like this before, at least not in his 35 years in the aviation market. I mean, do you believe these flight cancellations are necessary?
It's all in the name of safety. So, I think the industry and working with the FAA have done a tremendous job. As was just reported, you know, for the first 5 or 6 weeks, we had some delays here and there. But everyone was putting in a lot of overtime, making sure that a small delay didn't turn into a cancellation. Customers were being served ultimately. But what we have seen, I'm looking at a chart as I sit. It's been a long night, long 48 hours here. Looking at data at my desk right now, really over the last 7 days, the number of both cancellations, staffing callouts, not just in 4 or 5 areas, but on some days over this, even this past weekend, a dozen or more areas, it's really growing. So that stress on the system is building. And what the FAA has said to the airlines is, look, we got to make sure that we are not waiting for a real problem to happen. And the airlines absolutely agree with that. Let's find a way to roll in pullback, if you will, knowing that we got the holidays right around the corner, right? So it's going to be tough. It's nothing that the airlines aren't willing to do, especially given that it's all in the name of safety.
So in your view, really a move to keep this system safe? I mean, you're from the world of politics. You and your father were both governors in New Hampshire. And so this critique that this is more about optics and politics than real safety. What do you say to that?
Oh, no, that's nonsense. No, it is all about safety. Trust me, the airlines are at the risk of losing hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
They're not doing that just for political moves. They're doing it because they know safety is absolutely paramount. Pressures are absolutely growing. You know, this has been a really great public-private partnership, right? On the public side, you have the air traffic controllers, those TSA agents that keep going to work, putting in the overtime every single day, not getting paid 14 times, right? 14 times folks up on Capitol Hill have said no to paying these individuals. And God bless them, they keep coming. And so on that partnership has worked incredibly well for the first 35-plus days of this unprecedented shutdown. But these stresses are growing. These families are feeling pressure, and it's real. And so, again, it's about being proactive and making sure that the American public knows it is absolutely safe to book a flight. It is absolutely safe. We slow the system down to ensure that safety, right? Because you don't want it to get to a critical point. So everyone's putting in the overtime. It's not going to be easy, but all the airlines are stepping up and doing everything they can to make sure that customers aren't just being hard canceled. They're being moved their flights when they can. They're really trying to find as much flexibility.
How are those decisions being made on where to cut, which flights to cancel?
Each airline has the discretion to figure that out. So what the goal is, we call it taking blips out of the sky, right? So the air traffic controllers are looking at 10% less of that congestion traffic. And they're giving each airline a lot of flexibility and discretion to determine, you know, this flight can be moved. There's only a few passengers on this one. We can double them up there, because every airline runs a little bit differently. So they're giving them the discretion to again, take that 10% of overall flights down, but allowing themselves the ability to maintain their customers as best as they can.
As you point out, the holidays are coming, which means a lot of these flights are going to be fully booked. What is the impact that this is going to have on travelers?
If this goes into Thanksgiving weekend, this could be really, really tough. So I think the measures that are being taken are going to have some real positive effects in keeping everyone safe. As that pressure builds, though, we could see more call-outs. We could see more issues within the TSA and the air traffic controllers if those numbers continue to decrease. We watch that data literally hourly. So as that builds, hopefully we don't have to take additional measures. But here's the answer. There's going to be another vote today, right? Maybe 15th time is the charm. Maybe they'll finally get their act together on Capitol Hill, say yes, open the government on this continuing resolution. And really, it has nothing to do with the airline industry, right? This is the American public and the airline industry really being held hostage on silly politics on Capitol Hill. So the message is, please do your job, open things back up, and they can take care of the health care and all those other really important things in parallel. But you can't hold the whole system hostage over politics.
And just a reminder, this is a record-breaking government shutdown. Chris Sununu is president and CEO of Airlines for America and the former governor of New Hampshire. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The Supreme Court is allowing President Trump to proceed with his plan to require that all passport applicants list their sex at birth without any accommodation for transgender individuals. The vote was 6-3. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The Trump policy is starkly different from policies adopted by six previous presidential administrations that allowed transgender individuals to list what the plaintiffs call their apparent gender identity on passports. The Trump administration broke with those policies just days after his second inauguration. Here is Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt announcing the change.
President Trump also signed an executive order declaring it is now the policy of the federal government that there are only two sexes, male and female. Sanity has been restored.
A group of transgender individuals challenged the new policy in court, contending that it amounted to unconstitutional sex discrimination, and they prevailed in the trial court, with the Court of Appeals refusing to intervene. The Trump administration then went to the Supreme Court, asking that those lower court orders be blocked, at least for now, and the justices gave Trump what he wanted. In a short, unsigned opinion released yesterday afternoon, the conservative court majority was unusually blunt. It gave little to no weight to allegations that the trial court had found credible, that some of the plaintiffs had been beaten up and subjected to strip searches once it became clear that they were transgender. Contrary to those findings, the Supreme Court said that it was the Trump administration that was suffering a form of irreparable injury by not being allowed to carry out a policy with, quote, foreign affairs implications. Writing for the three liberal justices in dissent, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said, the court has once again paved the way for immediate infliction of injury without adequate or really any justification. Because I cannot acquiesce to these pointless but painful perversions of our equitable discretion, I respectfully dissent. The case now goes back to the lower courts. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News.
It is 6:19. Thanks for listening to the Friday Morning Show on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr, sitting in for John Bauer. Heidi Holton joins me shortly. Then we'll hear national native news. At 6:45, our talkback segment. It's always great to hear from our listeners. You can share your thoughts about our programming anytime. Text 218-326-1234. Programming is supported by Grand Dental Center, where doctors Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com. Mostly cloudy today, highs in the mid to upper 30s, winds from the northwest 10 to 20. Temperatures tonight 16 to 23, and for tomorrow partly sunny, highs in the low to mid 30s with gusty north winds. Lows tomorrow night in the upper teens, and for Sunday partly sunny, highs near 30. Support for KAXE comes from Headwaters Music and Arts in downtown Bemidji, offering music lessons and art programming for all ages. More at headwatersmusicandarts.org or on Facebook and Instagram. Northern Lights Community School in Warba invites the public to a Veterans Day program on Tuesday, November 11th at 1 o'clock. Vietnam veteran Dennis Jerome will speak about his experiences. You can find information about more Veterans Day programs at KAXC.org. Look for events up north.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Legacy Box, committed to saving aging tapes and photos by bringing them to life in digital form, then making them accessible in Legacy Box Cloud. Learn more at legacybox.com. From the Cy Sims Foundation, since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts towards a fairer, more just, and civil society. More information is available at cysimsfoundation.org. From AT&T, a network that is making connections for Americans. Connecting changes everything. Learn more at att.com/YATT. And from the sustaining members of this NPR station.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Zohran Mamdani's election as mayor of New York City prompted an unusual response from the Anti-Defamation League. The organization that fights anti-Semitism says it's starting what it calls the Mamdani Monitor. It's a special initiative to track what the new mayor does, and it also includes a tip line to report anti-Semitic incidents. Mamdani responded when talking with reporters on Wednesday.
I take the issue of anti-Semitism incredibly seriously. And last night in my speech, I spoke about how my city hall will stand steadfast with Jewish New Yorkers in fighting the scourge of anti-Semitism across the city.
Mamdani is the first Muslim and first South Asian American elected New York's mayor. He is also a critic of Israel's war in Gaza. He said he would try to have the Israeli prime minister arrested for war crimes on his next visit to New York. Asked if he accepts Israel's right to exist, he has said he accepts an Israel with equal rights for all. This drew the attention of Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, who has spoken out against pro-Palestinian protesters ever since the October 7th attacks. In our conversation, Greenblatt acknowledged that about one-third of New York Jews voted for Mamdani. He says he represents the concerns of those who did not.
We want to make sure that our community fully understands what's happening so that we can hold him accountable to the campaign promises he's made to be the mayor for all New Yorkers, including Jewish New Yorkers.
Does your project also include a tip line? Do I have that right?
It does. So there's three parts to it. Number one, the monitor, which will evaluate personnel, policies, and programs. Number two, we're doubling down our research to track this information. And then number three, a tip line for Jewish New Yorkers if they experience anti-Semitism. Our concern is that some of the positions the mayor-elect has taken over the years, some of the statements he's made or not made, as it were, could create a permission structure for anti-Semitism.
Okay, so it's not a tip line for people to call in their theories about Zohran Mamdani and his beliefs.
No.
It is a tip line for people to give you their experiences.
Correct. We're not interested in their theories on the mayor-elect. We're interested in real-world situations, in real-life incidents, so we can track them effectively and make sure law enforcement is following up as appropriate.
Now, there's a couple of categories that I think you mentioned when you talked about concerns about Mamdani and the Jewish community or in parts of the Jewish community. One is his views about Israel, mm-hmm. and there is plenty that people could disagree with there.
Absolutely.
He stood for BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, mm-hmm. for example. But you also said positions he's taken about the Jewish community in New York. Which positions concern you?
Well, so we are concerned, for example, about his views on Zionism. Now, there's nothing wrong with having strong opinions, being very critical about the state of Israel. But when you demonize its people, when you delegitimize its right to exist, when you hold it to double standards. So when Mayor-elect Mamdani says he's going to implement BDS because of human rights violations, it's reasonable to ask, why doesn't he have the same view on all the other countries with whom the city of New York contracts that also have human rights violations?
Just to be clear, because somebody listening will have this thought in their head, and I want you to respond to it. Do you think it is acceptable to be critical and even fiercely critical of Israel and its policies and its conduct in the war in Gaza without being anti-Semitic?
So if you're looking for an organization that is critical of the state of Israel without being anti-Semitic, I would direct you to ADL.org. It worries me that today, when people are upset about what the state of Israel is doing, where they somehow think it's okay to bash Jewish people in the head, you know we're a very data-driven organization. We released a study, and we found that over 50% of American Jews are hiding their identity in public. This is very, very real. In Brooklyn, at a synagogue, there were blood-red swastikas graffitied all over the physical space. Now, I don't know who did it. I'm not sure what their logic was. But there's a reason why every synagogue in America, Steve, now has bulletproof glass, cameras, guards. The community lives with a degree of fear that no community should live with.
Have you set up a monitoring project like this previously for a specific elected official?
We've certainly never had an elected official like this before. But look, I mean, we've talked over the years. I've called out the Trump administration on a regular basis since 2016. We've called out nominees, whether it was Matt Gaetz for Attorney General or Joe Kent to run the National Counterterrorism Center, or Paul Ingrassia, who pulled back his own nomination for the Office of Special Counsel. So I simply want to track what's going on so New Yorkers know and understand, and then they can make their own decisions. Look, this isn't inherently pejorative. It's simply saying in a moment of crisis, like we've never had before, we're going to be paying very close attention.
Because you raised the issue of double standards with Israel, some people will ask if you have a double standard here. You have been critical of Trump. You've been on this program and been critical of things that Trump did, but you didn't set up a special monitoring project for the president of the United States.
Well, let me be clear. We have never had a moment like this where anti-Semitism is so high. This is the city in America with the most Jewish people. Let me stipulate. This mayor-elect, over the last 6-7 months, has demonstrated a kind of pragmatism on issues related to the economy, on issues related to law enforcement. He has demonstrated a willingness to learn. On this issue, say, for example, on globalizing the Intifada, I don't see that at all.
There have been a lot of people who've criticized Mamdani in a lot of ways. There is a Republican lawmaker from Tennessee, Andy Ogles, member of Congress, who is not the only lawmaker to push for a Justice Department investigation of Mamdani to see if there's a way to deport him, although he is a citizen.
I mean, that's repugnant. It's repugnant. I think, like, attacks on him based on his ethnicity or his faith are repellent. And we would certainly never engage in that.
Have you reached out to Mamdani, his campaign, or now his transition team?
Well, look, certainly my door is always open to meet with him. He has said publicly that he would not meet with Jonathan Greenblatt, that he thought there were, quote, better representatives of the Jewish community than Jonathan Greenblatt and the ADL. If he's ready for a serious conversation about what he will do to protect Jewish New Yorkers, we absolutely would be prepared to have that conversation with him. Like I said, my door is open.
Jonathan Greenblatt, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
This is NPR News.
Global pop star Rosalia is back with a new album, and it's her most ambitious yet, featuring 13 different languages.
I love people realizing that pop music can be great art, and that's something that's happening here.
I'm Juana Summers. NPR's Stephen Thompson reviews Rosalia's sprawling new record, Lux. That's on All Things Considered from NPR News.
It is almost 6:30 and you are tuned in to the Friday morning show. I'm Heidi Holton. That's not John Bauer.
I'm another JB.
Did I? Yeah, it's JB joining me today. Did I sound too excited?
I'm Jennifer Farr. Happy to sit in with you this morning, Heidi.
Yeah, Friday mornings, we get a little loose.
Yeah.
You get the Monday morning where it's a little more buttoned up.
Uh-huh. Yes, it is.
Got a lot ahead for you today. We'll be bringing you some local news. Jennifer had a chance to talk with Marshall Helmberger. Of course, it's deer hunting season. I expect the traffic to swell in Grand Rapids. This is always kind of a big time. People come into town. You see the guy up in orange at the barbershop up by the sign right now. Mm. He's kind of hanging out with you. And
you see, if you look carefully in people's vehicles, trucks especially, you'll see an orange hat almost always.
Yes. So hope you are excited about this. A lot of people use this as a get together with family and friends, whether you hunt or not, you know, but it's a big part of the tradition here. And there are too many deer. I'm going to say that.
Yeah, you experienced a deer this year that you did not want to.
Yeah, that was awful. I had no idea what it was like to hit a deer with a car. So
yeah,
hope that has not happened to you. But we're sharing stories about hunting. It's going to be a big night tomorrow night. It is the Crab Sisters. Imagine that they're in the deer stand with you. That's what it's going to feel like.
The hunting shack at that point of the night. Yeah.
It's going to be great. You're going to want to tune in tomorrow night. Green Cheese Trivia. It is the hunting tradition, 7 o'clock. We've got a lot of great stuff going on for you today, and we could see some rain and some flurries early today, then cloudy, highs 35 to 40, north winds 5 to 10, gusting up to 20, mostly cloudy tonight with lows 16 to 24 across our region, partly sunny tomorrow, highs 30 to 34, little phenology, Jennifer walked in with a hat today. You maybe did earlier the week.
Yep, I've been doing it, in the mornings. It's been a little chilly. It's going to be chillier, though, as we're getting into the teens here, it sounds like.
Yeah, overnight teens, but during the day, Saturday and Sunday, 30 to 34 degrees across the region. So pretty typical temperatures for this time of year.
Yeah. Support comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
We've got the Up North Report coming up at 7:01 today. Up next, we've got national native news for you. Some tribal leaders are supporting a proposed bill that could expand sports betting in Wisconsin. We'll be learning about that. And we've got a lot more, including lots of events this weekend. We don't even dip into all the craft fairs because there are too many.
There are so many. I did put some in the events up north online that were sent to me just because they took the time to send those to us. And it gets to be a lot for on air, but for the web, it's a perfect thing. So,
lots of folks might be going to it. I was overhearing friends talk about, one at this place and how big it is. And there's so many people that I just go in every year for this certain thing. And like people have their traditions.
Kind of know what's what.
Yep. We'd love to hear from you. What are you doing this weekend? You can text us at 218-326-1234.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some tribal leaders are supporting a proposed bill that could expand sports betting in Wisconsin. Chuck Kornbach has more.
About three dozen states allow some form of sports betting, but in Wisconsin, the only legal way to place a wager on a sporting event is at some tribal casinos. Proposed legislation would allow Wisconsin tribes to operate computer servers and other technology so that sports gamblers could be anywhere in the state and place a bet online. Jeff Crawford is Attorney General of the Forest County Potawatomi. He told a legislative hearing that allowing tribes to offer more sports betting would encourage gamblers to turn away from using illegal and unreliable offshore betting firms.
While online gaming is currently at the Wild West in Wisconsin with no regulations or protections for consumers, it does not have to be.
Kyle White Eagle is a tribal legislator for the Ho-Chunk Nation. He says his tribe provides a lot of services across a wide geographic area and needs additional gaming revenue to better tackle problems like poverty and opioid addiction.
Giving tribes in Wisconsin the right to conduct mobile sports betting isn't going to solve these problems completely, but it will help significantly and it will be funding well spent.
But a coalition of national commercial sports gambling firms, including DraftKings and FanDuel, opposes the Wisconsin bill. Attorney Damon Stewart of the Sports Betting Alliance says gamblers would lose out if legally they could only go through the tribes.
Unfortunately, this bill will not result in a competitive market for online sports betting that provides consumers with choice.
If the mobile sports betting bill passes in Wisconsin, it would still take time for the state to renegotiate gaming compacts with the tribes and for the U.S. Interior Department to approve the gaming expansion. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quirnbach.
An Arizona tribe is giving its members some financial relief as the federal government shutdown continues, impacting programs like food assistance. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports.
The Gila River Indian community is calling them general welfare payments, one-time $1,000 disbursements for each 18-year-old tribal member, regardless of whether they're a SNAP recipient. That decision came on Saturday during a special counsel session called by Governor Stephen Roe Lewis.
I hope that this payment brings some peace of mind during this time of uncertainty at the federal level.
Lewis urges his tribe south of Phoenix to plan for the long haul.
So please, use or set aside for your food needs to pay bills and to add some measure of economic security.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
The chairman of the Lumbee Tribe of North Carolina says he's confident that this year full services and benefits will be extended to his tribe. Chairman John Lowry made the remarks Wednesday during a legislative hearing on the Lumbee Fairness Act, which would grant the tribe federal recognition. Lowry says his tribe has long sought federal status.
I'm a descendant of Solomon Locklear Sr., one of the 44 tribal leaders who in 1888, petitioned Congress to recognize the Lumbee tribe. Today, 137 years later, I stand before you once again advocating for justice and equal treatment through full federal recognition.
Wednesday's hearing in the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs included opposition. Leaders from the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians of North Carolina and the Shawnee Tribe of Oklahoma testified against the bill, while Lowry submitted a list of tribal support and testified that nearly all of North Carolina's congressional delegation backs the bill. President Trump, in a statement this week, issued his support for the Lumbee Tribe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
You can also hear National Native News coming up this afternoon at 4:30 during All Things Considered here on People Powered KAXE. You know, Jennifer, you're sitting in for the other JB today. That means you got to tell some sort of explosive story at some point, okay?
Okay.
I have a little story for you. I keep meaning to tell you. I'm hoping it's okay on air. Not that it's racy. It's just, it'd be fun if the person heard it who I'm talking about. I was driving home. Tom and I are in the car. We're driving home and there's a young girl, like early teens, holding a cardboard that's a sign, you know, mm-hmm. and it's in a residential area. It wasn't on like a main thoroughfare,
yeah.
you know? And I thought, oh, what's happening? You know, and so I kind of squinted and looked, and it said, selling, no, what would it have said? For sale, 3D cats. And I was like, it's like, it was one of those, I felt like I had a cartoon, like, what? You know? And I said to Tom, we're going to have to turn around. Just go the whole circle on the roundabout here and go back. So we go back because I'm just like, what? And she's standing, it was kind of a cold day.
Yeah.
You know, it was, oh, it was Sunday, you know,
like yeah,
before noon. And I was just like, huh. And she's got the table. So I'm thinking maybe there's snacks for sale too or lemonade. Nope, just 3D cats. So she kind of told us the story and how they work and then showed us on her phone that she also makes 3D dragons.
Oh, okay. So not just act. She wasn't being clever of like, this is just cats because no. Yeah. So she makes them.
Yeah. There's a 3D printer at school.
Okay.
She really loves it and she makes them. She's kind of explaining it. And of course I had to buy one. Like if we stopped,
yeah,
we're going to have to buy one. I bought a little one. Tom's like, you don't want that. I'm like, don't say that in front of her. Yes, I do. I want a purple one. Anyway, so I have a 3D cat in my car.
Oh,
but what, you know, what ingenuity there, huh?
Yeah.
But it was so, I mean, what? How would you feel if you saw that sign? Would you pull over?
I would be like, what is happening? But I don't know that I'd pull over.
Yeah. It might have been because I was with someone. I don't know if I would on my own.
Yeah.
But it was fun to talk to her. Mom showed up too. You know, they lived right there. And then she hadn't completely cleaned them off. So then everybody's like, how come you didn't do that? And I'm like, I don't care. I'll just take my purple cat. Anyway, it was kind of fun. I just remembered, I don't even think we ever did lemonade, but I remember us trying to do snacks in the summertime on a little stand outside our resort. And only people who knew us stopped, you know.
Like, did you homemade, like cupcakes or something? Mm-hmm. Or
cookies, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My neighbor and I did a lemonade stand once or twice.
And how'd that go?
Not very successful. We didn't get a lot of traffic on our street.
But you gotta love it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. My first business in life, and you know this, is I made pom-poms and sold them on the bus.
That's
you
right.
Know? It was a big time for pom-poms on your roller skates, so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Not
like the yarn ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Not a big money-making business, and I never paid my dad back for the yarn. That's okay. First business experience. Tell us a story. What's happening for you this Friday morning? What are you doing this weekend? Text 218-326-1234. If you didn't get a chance to hear, we debuted a new segment yesterday, North Star Student. And there's a great photo of the chosen student, Abby Damon. And she is from Bemidji. She is a swimmer. We got to hear from her and the nominator, her coach, who nominated her. And we were talking to Megan about this. She's the one that's come up with this idea of how we can spotlight high school kids more. It's not just sports. It's any way that a kid might be standing out. But we are asking people to nominate them and then talking to both of them. Because I know, you know, it's not always easy to talk about what you've accomplished.
Sure.
When you are 16 or 17.
Or when you're 44.
Yes, no kidding. Abby was great, though, talking about it. But it's a really fun way and another bright moment in life in northern Minnesota when sometimes the news is getting us down. And the weather, you know, after daylight saving, and we're not quite in the... I love it when we first start getting snow, even though I know a lot of folks don't, but it just brightens it up again, you know? And it's the in-between season. So check it out. It's at kaxe.org.
Starting in 2026, tax rules related to charitable giving are shifting. That means right now might be the right time to give to KAXE and other nonprofits. Check with a financial advisor to see if it's a good time for you to make a gift. And your support helps keep people-powered radio strong and ensures a bright future for KAXE.
Now, Jennifer, you produced the conversation we had yesterday. It's a little bit like a lemonade stand, but the
Tailgate Pantry,
yeah,
in Bemidji, that's happening tomorrow, 3 to 5 in the Paul Bunyan Mall parking lot. And it's, I love how they got their idea. They saw trunk or treats happening and they're like, why don't we do this with food and other items that people might need? And it's really, you can exchange things if you have a lot of something and you need something, or if you just need something, you can take things. If you want to give things, you can give things. Mm-hmm. Really open-ended, but people will be there and supporting each other, which is a really, it's a bright spot. And that's what we want to highlight here.
Yeah, we all need a little bit of a bright spot. Coming up, we'll have the talkback segment of the Friday Morning Show.
Picking a fight again, isn't it wearing thin? It's getting hard to tell. It's getting hard to call. Maybe the reason we're falling apart. Isn't my sister, or you crashing my car? It's a change of heart. It's a whiff of a feeling that grows in your sleep, keeping you up till the dawn. How many phones can you throw at a wall? It's a change, it's a change of heart. Sofa, just keep it all and start walking it off. Why do we keep on making it hard? It's a change of heart. It's a shift of some weight that builds on your back, catching your balance off. Can you throw to the dogs? It's a change, it's a change of heart. Here I am, it's 10 a.m. I'm putting you back in my phone again. I never played, I was good at clean breaks or spending the night alone. But then
song I love, Change of Heart by Yor Smith. I almost called her Yor Caroline, but it's Caroline Smith. She is a Minnesota musician, and it's the kind of music you hear on KAXE. Malachi Coon's coming up at 9 o'clock for Headwaters, followed by Minnesota Mixtape.
It is time for our talkback segment. We're always glad to hear from our listeners, good or bad. Your comments matter. You can email comments at KAXE or text us 218-326-1234.
KAXE volunteer Dave Murphy texted last Friday morning saying, great Minnesota mixtape today, Malachi. I love your playlist.
Then we heard from Dave's sister, Elizabeth. She donated from Glenview, Illinois, and said, Dave so enjoys hosting shows on KAXE. I also enjoy listening to his broadcast. P.S., but don't tell him.
Too bad, sister. Jeff from Osseo emailed last Saturday after Tom Daniel hosted Back Porch Harmony. He said, very refreshing to hear great old music shared in such a fun way. The local connection and real world style is welcome. Keep it going.
You can tune in tomorrow morning for Back Porch Harmony. Your volunteer host is Dan Lentz. And did you know that Back Porch Harmony also airs now Sunday nights from 8 to 10?
You know, I did know, but I am always so glad when I hear Tom Daniel because he reminds folks of that. And that's such great Sunday night feel to have Back Porch.
Right after jazz. So it's...
Our news team covered several school referendum and school board elections this week. Adrian from Deer River told us, so grateful for this local reporting. You can find those local election results at KAXE.org.
Heidi from LaPorte became a member yesterday and commented, what a great station. I've recently moved to the area and I'm really enjoying the shows and music in your programming. Thanks for bringing all you do to the region.
I love hearing stories like that, that like someone new to the area finds us. I'm like, wow, like what that must feel like to just feel connected when you're brand new somewhere.
And like randomly coming across it, I assume, I don't know, maybe somebody told her.
But
yeah.
For a question of the week, we've been asking about your hunting traditions. Karen from Cohasset said, the first drive of the deer hunting opener led by my dad by tradition, as my mom and siblings patiently, quietly waited in their deer stands for the drive to take place. This was the Hoopla family tradition.
I love that. And Justine from Chisholm said, I love feeding my hunters. It's like training for the Thanksgiving marathon.
And Dave from 50 Lakes texted us about our album of the week, Get Your Feathers Ready by Blue Moon Marquee and Northern Cree. He said, downloaded the album yesterday. Love the growly voice and guitar topped off with the rhythmic driving drums. Put Your Feathers On is my fave.
We go dance.
There it was.
Our album of the week.
Get your feathers ready. It's by Blue Moon Marquee and Northern Cree, and we heard that song there, Put Your Feathers On. It is a collaboration that came out of A.W. Cardinal's desire to dig into his Cree heritage through music and rhythm. Check out the information at kaxc.org, and you can find more in this week's Fresh Picks coming from our music team.
Yeah, a new feature where we talk more about music, not just the album of the week.
Yeah, I know. I feel like that's sort of a tip for life, like if for small talk. I don't always love small talk, so you could kind of read up on some Fresh Picks.
Ah,
when you get together, like you could just lay that out there, like you knew.
I have huge respect for our music team because I think it's one of the hardest things to write about music and say why you like something. Mm-hmm. I just like it.
Yeah. Someone asked me the other day, like I use Goodreads. It was with Andrew on Wednesday. I won't rate Goodreads. I won't rate the books I read because I just feel like I can't, because it's all so based on different things. Like, sometimes I read books that they're not the best writing, but I loved it for a certain reason. I can't come across in a star, you know?
I do the star ratings, but I usually can't say anything else besides that. Like, why I liked it, why I didn't like it. I got nothing.
I think I interviewed so many authors for so long for the program I used to produce that I would feel bad.
Oh, sure.
I'm not usually like that, but for some reason, and then once I just thought if I do it once and I'm going to have to do it all the time, and I just like, nope, I can't do it at all. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I thought of this last week, way before this conversation came up, because I actually had a crazy moment where I thought, should I just go back and rate all of them? I went, no, what is wrong
with you?
Like you
remember.
I barely remember some of the books you read, but I'm reading the latest Gamache. The 20th book from Louise Penny. The Black Wolf. The last one was The Gray Wolf. This one is very related to that one. And I'm about 100 pages in. I'm very excited for my weekend.
Oh, good.
Really delve into it. How about you? What are you reading?
I just finished a book called Here One Moment by Leanne Moriarty. Mm. She's the author that did like Big Little Lies that was turned into a show.
Yeah.
So this Here One Moment, it's about a flight. She must be Australian because I assume it takes place in Australia. It's a flight from the island of Tasmania to Sydney, just like it should be a simple flight. This woman on the flight starts walking down the aisle and she's predicting when everybody's going to die, how they're going to die. She's going down age of death, cause of death, and some people are taking her really seriously. Some people aren't. Things start happening. Some of her predictions start coming true. People are trying to find her. People are changing their lives based on these things. Like one woman has a baby. She tells her the baby's going to die at age 7 by drowning. This woman, the mother of the baby, becomes obsessed with getting this baby swimming lessons, making sure like he's going to be okay.
So it doesn't all take place on that plane, right?
No,
they go back home.
It's the aftermath. It's about six people. At first I was having trouble keeping track of who was who, but it clicked in. So yeah, you're kind of following the lives. And then also interspersed in that is this woman's life who they are calling the death lady. But so you learn like her background. Her mom was a fortune teller. You realize she, after the flight, she has no recollection of doing this.
Oh, wow.
So,
Did you like it?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That very immediately good. Sort of scared me, you know? I don't know why.
It's like I know your look was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Is this a horror novel?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I've never done like a fortune teller or gone to
like that. I don't want to know.
No. Interesting. So what, the title again?
Here One Moment.
Okay, Leanne Moriarty.
Yep, and then the book I just started is called All the Other Mothers Hate Me by Sarah Harmon.
Oh.
And it sounds really interesting. I just started it last night. But
nice. Coming up next, we're going to bring you a couple local productions. It's The Set List and The Up North Report.
This is The Set List on KAXE, where we highlight live music around the area for the upcoming week. I'm Malachi Coons. We are taking a look at 5 shows this week, November 6th through the 8th, in Gilbert, Grand Rapids, Nisswa, and Bemidji. First up, Rich Mattson is performing solo at the Orr House in Gilbert Thursday at 6 p.m. The Minnesota music scene veteran of bands like The Bitter Spills, Glenn Russell's, Ole Yeller, Tired Eyes, and many more is still going strong with his current band, the North Stars. He plays solo sets every first Thursday at the Orr House in Gilbert. On Friday, Michaela James is playing at Rapids Brewing in Grand Rapids at 6 o'clock. She is a singer-songwriter from Rapids who is currently based in the Twin Cities. She specializes in acoustic sets with guitar and ukulele. Michaela James at Rapids Brewing this Friday. Annie Humphrey and the Fire in the Village Collective have